Welcome to episode 9 of All the Small Takes, the only podcast whose hosts will travel hundreds of miles to hang out with each other for a weekend and then still use Google Hangouts to record the podcast for the week. So we're here on this Sunday night. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Super tired.
Yeah, John's cats did a number on me.
Yeah, we preemptively apologize for the sniffles and the coughs and the sneezes that may interrupt this podcast.
They're John's fiance's cats.
Yeah, and they shed a lot. So bear with us on that, but thank you for joining us for another week. Really quickly, you can find us on social media, on Instagram, small_takes, Twitter, @smalltakes, Facebook, all the small takes, and Gmail, allthesmalltakes@gmail.com. As we said, we were all hanging out together this weekend in Indianapolis. We went to minor league baseball game, the Indianapolis Indians and Toledo Mud Hens. We want to give a quick shout out to the left fielder for the Indianapolis Indians, Eric Wood, who we were behind the entire night out in the left field lawn, and he was a great sport. We tossed him a tweet during the game, and he liked our tweet after the game. He's also Canadian, right? Is that correct?
Can't confirm.
So we're an international podcast now.
Yeah.
Also, so Eric, if you're listening, we're sorry about the loss last night. But if you could give us a shout out on your Twitter, which has more followers than ours, we'd appreciate it. All right, enough of that. We're going to jump into a couple topics this week. We have some NFL news to discuss. There were some retirement and unretirement happenings this past week. Tony Romo, we'll start there maybe, officially announced his retirement on subsequent joining of the CBS broadcast booth. This is yet another example of a time when this podcast was wrong, as we devoted an entire segment in our very first episode to where Tony Romo would land and none of us said CBS. So I guess, what are you guys' thoughts on Romo stepping away? Did he leave some of his, did he leave some potential out in the field?
I don't know. I mean, he's a guy who's had multiple years of pretty dramatic injuries. And maybe he just, you know, took a look at the calendar, thought of how much time he spends with his family normally, and remembered how much pain he's been through over his NFL career, and was like, I can be paid really good money to sit in a booth and talk about football. So I don't know. I don't think it's a bad decision. I kind of like it, actually, because he's walking away while he still has the ability to walk away, which is always huge when you talk about football players.
Yeah, I guess one thing that I'm just super curious about is how much injuries kind of played a role in his decision. The past couple of years, he's shown that his body maybe can't keep up. I mean, he still has had the potential. I mean, has the ability to play quarterback in the league, but he just can't take hits. And, you know, I mean, maybe he was just one or two hits away from doing some pretty, like, serious damage. I definitely don't, you know, blame the guy for walking out now. I mean, he's still got one game left, too, right? Like, he's suiting up for the Mavericks this week, so that's a pretty big deal.
That's true.
I do think that when a contending team's quarterback goes down this season, they're going to call him, and more likely than not, he's going to take the call, and he's probably going to go. So when Teddy Bridgewater tears his ACL in half this year, probably going to call him Tony Romo.
Tony Romo does have some serious Brett Favre potential. Like, he has the potential to be the Brett Favre of this generation, because I think that's 100% true.
Are we comparing Tony Romo to Brett Favre?
He's not as good as Brett Favre.
Is that where we're at on this podcast?
He's not as good as Brett Favre, Jeff.
That was not what I meant at all.
Get your Boston heresy out of here.
Uncalled for and unrelated. No, I just think the only reason I said that was because I think the retirement is – I think he still has something left in the tank. And to the comment, Cooper, that you said about him not being able to take hits, I think it's more of a him not doing as good of a job as he could of protecting himself. Like, it's not that he's fragile. I think he just puts himself in vulnerable situations. Like, Tom Brady, when he does take hits, I think he's pretty fragile. Like, he takes some knocks, but he's also very good about getting rid of the ball and knowing, having that clock ticking in his head. And I think, I don't know if Romo was ever the best at that. He certainly wasn't, but you can't just say, he couldn't take hits. Like, I think he could have learned to protect his body better.
Sure, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I think first it should be known that Jeff has always loved Tony Romo.
Huge Romo guy.
Yes, and you always have been. But I do think, like, as much as I might have, you know, seemingly supported or at least endorsed concussions in baseball last week, I am a, you know, firm opponent of concussions, as I think most of us are, because that seems to be the reasonable position. And
glad you set the record straight there.
I mean, honestly, like we love sports and like we're all huge sports fans, and I want to see my favorite players and the best players continuing to play the sports. But injuries are a reality in all these sports, and especially in football. Football's a dangerous sport. I mean, we've like seen horrific hits. We've seen dangerous concussions. We're now just starting to like learn about the effects of CTE, and I'm not blaming. There are more important things than football, and I'm not blaming Tony Romo for walking away. And I do think that like that had to have played a factor in his decision.
That's fair. Yeah. And that, go ahead, John.
I was just gonna say football's never gonna be safe. Like they can make it less and less brutal, but it's never gonna be a safe sport.
Yeah, and that's a discussion for another time. I think as they try to make it less and less brutal, it becomes harder and harder to enjoy as a fan and harder to officiate. And we've seen that become like an issue already with some of the new rules and stuff. But we also want to talk about another unretirement news that came out this week, and that was Marshawn Lynch, who hasn't officially announced his unretirement, but took a meeting with the Raiders, and all indications are that he's planning to unretire and may very well land on the Oakland, soon to be Las Vegas Raiders. And so I, for one, I don't know about you guys, was not at all surprised to hear that. When he stepped away, I thought it may have been a snap decision, or it may have been motivated by his 100% justified distaste for how the league treats players and the expectations they had for him. But I wasn't surprised to see him come back, and I think he definitely has more in the tank. I don't know what you guys think.
I think the question now, along with the Richard Sherman trade stuff, has got to be, why are all of Seattle's best players trying to get out of Seattle? And I think it's probably because Pete Carroll is a bizarro, strange man. Nobody actually likes playing for him. That's the storyline.
Really showing your biases in the first couple of minutes of this podcast, because I'm not gonna respond to that, because I love Marshawn, and so I prefer to talk about Marshawn. I think when he left, he was one of my favorite players in the league, and kind of like on the flip side of Tony Romo. Even though I guess Marshawn did experience some injuries towards the later bit of his career, he delivered the bruises, and I still think he is capable of running hard and running well, especially in an offense that relies on the pass. Mm-hmm. Someone like Oakland, soon to be Las Vegas, I guess, the Raiders. That's a terrifying, I think, terrifying team with Carr and Amari Cooper already on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I think they may have already been the presumptive favorites in the AFC West, and I think if in fact Marshawn Lynch does end up there, they become a very, very frightening team in the AFC. Who was Oakland's running back last year? I couldn't even tell you who it was.
Google could.
We do a lot of research for our show, folks. But yeah, I think I agree with you, Cooper. I think that makes them a really tough team, and I think he fits in really well with that system. All right. Well, anyway, we have another topic we wanted to get into. This one a little more relevant to the happenings right now in the sports world. The NBA playoffs are quickly approaching, and the Cleveland Cavaliers are, in Cooper's own words, an enigma. As we sit here, they just lost. They blew a 25-point lead to the Hawks, lost in overtime. This comes just a few days after laying an absolute smackdown on the Boston Celtics in Boston. So what? Who are the Cavs, Cooper?
I don't know. I'm sick of thinking about this, pondering this as I try and fall asleep at night. I don't know who the Cavs are. I mean, I really have never liked saying that, you can just switch on, whatever, a switch, the proverbial switch, because it kind of seems to take away all things that are good in sports. But I think that's what happened, right? Like the Cavs, like they showed that when it matters in a game that, they really wanted to win, that they are dominant and they can be dominant. And yet they go and drop two games to the Hawks, one of which the Hawks rested four of their starters. And in the other one, they gave up 44 points in the fourth quarter. And I don't know whether or not they're bored, which that kind of also sounds awful. But, certain players have thrown that out there, like Shaq. Shaq has said the Cavs look bored. They kind of do look bored. They're horrible on defense, yet they're decent at it when they want to be, and it's just they're an enigma, and it is so frustrating watching them, and I am just eagerly anticipating the playoffs when hopefully the switch just stays on for a couple weeks.
Well, that's the thing. If there's a switch, why isn't it on now when they're contending to not have the two seed and not have to face a really dangerous Washington team potentially in the second round? Like, I don't. When you say like when they need to turn it on, they turn it on. I don't know that gels with these last two games, which were important games down the home stretch of the season.
Go ahead, John.
I don't think they need to turn them on now because I don't think that matters. And I think LeBron actually wants to play the Wizards, and he actually wants to beat the Wizards, and he wants to get the Celtics, and he wants to beat the Celtics. And if it gets to a game seven, he wants to rip out Boston's heart at the Garden. I think LeBron legitimately wants to do this because I think LeBron has gotten angry over the past, I don't know, season and a half with Steph Curry winning back-to-back MVPs. And, you know, I think all this Lonzo Ball stuff. Also, people are talking about, you like, oh, is this having an effect on Lonzo? Is this having an effect on people, how they evaluate them? I think it might be having an effect on LeBron James. I mean, because he came out and he had that comment back at LeVar Ball talking about his sons. LeBron is starting to feel like he is not a young player. He's not a guy where you talk about upside or, you know, the future. You talk about the now. And the now is might be becoming the past. I still think LeBron's going to be playing great for like another 5 or 6 or maybe even 7 years. But I think this is getting to be the LeBron James mentality. I think that's what's going on right now.
Well, it's always been the LeBron James mentality, right? He's always been incredibly aware of father time, as he likes to call it. And he's always been big into the process. What's the bigger picture?
He knows
that Golden State, I mean, that's the team to beat. And I think these other Eastern Conference teams, as much as I, as a fan, don't want to underestimate them, is there any, like, I think the Cavs kind of might have just put that away, you know, later last week. The Celtics didn't stand a chance in that game.
Yeah.
From the tip. And I mean, I don't fully understand it, but like that's what happened. And they kind of did this last year. Like Ty Lue kind of revealed this like heavily reliant 3-point offense that didn't really exist in the regular season and then absolutely decimated teams in the playoffs. And apparently he kind of has like these secrets going on. He has revealed in press conferences that he has been working on plans to help their defensive efficiency and all these things that they're absolutely abysmal in, and said that he doesn't want to reveal them too early. He doesn't want teams to kind of figure it out.
Well, this is what I was talking to you guys about earlier when we were talking about like the best postseasons. The regular season doesn't matter in the NBA. Like if you, as long as you get across the line and make it in the playoffs, that's all LeBron James cares about. He doesn't care about the regular season at all. He just cares about making it to the second season, mm-hmm. which is the postseason.
Yeah, it's really like
beyond that, nothing matters.
Like, the regular season's kind of like a preseason for him. How does he get his team prepared for what is coming up, you know, when it really matters?
Sure, and yes,
this is the crime of the NBA playoffs.
I think it's what makes it so great, but anyways.
I agree. And so back to the point of like, this has been the case with LeBron teams in the past where there's always the kind of swoon and you have the players only meeting. You have some subtweets on Instagram and
subtweets on Instagram. Okay. Interesting theory.
Ooh, next level stuff.
When you say that Ty Lue has this secret drawer of plays and of defensive, like that doesn't happen in NBA postseasons. There are lineups that are tweaked and there are little advantages that are exploited, mm-hmm. but there's not like, there's no real example of a team that's brought out something like that's completely taken the rest of the league and their opponents in the playoffs by surprise that much.
No, at some point, I'm not saying like that big of a surprise, but I do think things are hidden, right? Like I think how efficient LeBron and Kyrie are in the pick and roll is something that is used in the regular season. But then when you get into the postseason is used way more frequently just because they want to kind of like save it, which makes sense, I guess. Another big thing that I think the Cavs are kind of, Ty Lue is kind of hiding right now, specifically rotations. And I think lots of coaches do this. The Cavs in February kind of revealed this almost like big lineup.
The anti-Warriors.
Yeah, the anti-Warriors. Where, you know, positions 1 through 4, they could all switch on pick and rolls. It was their best defensive lineup. It's also an incredibly good offensive lineup. I think out of all rotations in the league, it has the highest plus minus in a very small sample size. And it's disappeared. We have not seen it in the past couple of weeks. So that's just like a kind of a little thing I think that Ty Lue is going to pull out. I mean, that's not like, it's probably not going to take opponents by like that much of a surprise because it has been revealed a little bit But I think like those might be kind of the little things that he's talking about.
If we're talking about big lineups, though, let's be real. Sixers have the best, or have the best big lineup of all time. We're going to start
guys
not just from 1 to 4, but from 1 to 5, that are going to be within an inch of 7 feet. Within an inch, no one will shoot. We will block out the sun.
Okay,
the flat sun.
The flat sun.
I mean, if that brings you joy and entertainment while sitting in second to last place in the Eastern Conference.
Also, shout out to the Phillies. Most runs in an inning in like years.
Topical.
I'm just going to throw that in there.
Just getting desperate.
Topical.
Just getting desperate.
Quick transition. Quick,
folks,
transition.
We are dying for the NBA playoffs.
Lastly, can we just like, we all kind of agree that Russ is probably the MVP? Should be the MVP?
Yeah, we should address this.
No. So I don't agree with you.
Oh, God. Of course you don't. If I would have said something else, you would have, whatever. Anyways.
No. Okay, so yeah, he did break Oscar Robertson's record tonight, which is a huge deal.
Wild, what, scoring, putting up like 55 or something.
And hitting the game winner.
Yeah, no big deal.
He's a good basketball player. He's a great basketball player. He's someone who I would want on my team. If you're saying, hey, you could have Russell, you can not, I'd be like, you're insane. I want Russell Westbrook on my team. But I don't think he's the most valuable player in the NBA because I think he's been doing these things. And he got his 42nd triple-double tonight. I think the night when he got his 41st, they lost by 25 points. I think he's missing a key element of what it means to be the most valuable player, and that is being an effective and a good teammate. And I think James Harden has the same, after a certain point, you have to be deadened by the stats. And I think James Harden and Russell Westbrook both have passed that area where, like, now it's like, yeah, their stats are pretty much all the same. And I think then you have to go, like, you have to go look at other things. And I think being a good teammate should matter for who's the most valuable player. And I think James Harden has done a better job of being a good teammate than Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I mean, I do think kind of like if you are the most valuable player, maybe your team should sit higher than sixth place in a conference.
Well, I'm not even talking about like team record. His team has physically suffered because of his play.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but I do think he is kind of lacking in certain. You would think that if he's this absolutely wonderful player, which I mean he definitely is, but he does seem to kind of be like lacking in almost like his leadership ability and ability to kind of like bring his team with him. I kind of have a hard time thinking that if you switched LeBron and Russ, the Thunder would not be a much better team.
I think they'd at least be a 3 seed.
Yeah, which is kind of something. I mean, we have definitely underappreciated the greatness that is LeBron. And we're kind of actually probably starting to do the same thing with like Steph. We're just moving on because we want the next big thing. But yeah, I think it's an important quality and needs to be talked about. Like the Thunder are not a good, they're sixth in the conference.
See, but what I think about is where they would be without him. And they would be one of the four worst teams in the league.
If you switch the other candidates with him, if you put Harden in Russ's place, or you put Kawhi in Russ's place, or LeBron in Russ's place, do you not think they're a better team? I think in every single scenario, they're probably a better team.
Because
their record is probably better.
I mean, so he has a crew of, I would say, at best, average players around him. Like he's missing key players that you need to succeed in the NBA. Like he does not have a guy who can spot up and hit 3-pointers. I guess Doug McDermott kind of fits that bill now, and he's got good big men, which are increasingly not valuable in today's NBA. Like he's got Steven Adams and Enes Kanter. He has single-handedly made those guys into marginally better players, even though, like, yes, they're still sixth in the Eastern or in the Western Conference standings. And I just think that team is not constructed well, and what he has done to bring them to where they are versus the Rockets, which were constructed in a very specific way. Like that team is built to rain 3-pointers down. And that's what James Harden's thrived on, is having those guys around him. So I think Russ does deserve, because without him, that team is just this mismatched group and is this mismatched group of players that aren't really built to compete in the modern NBA. And he's turned them into at least a team that's going to be like moderately dangerous in the first round of the playoffs.
I don't know. The numbers are impressive, but I think kind of like what John has said, I think without Russ and maybe with one of the other guys, they're a better team, which would almost kind of remove him from being the MVP candidate.
I think it's something you ought to take into account.
That's fair enough. And I do agree, just to close the loop here on the LeBron thing, that we've become desensitized to his talent. And I think going back to what John said a little while earlier about how it kind of, he probably does feel slighted. I think he's justified in that because he's putting up MVP caliber numbers and he's an MVP caliber player. And I think he's kind of an afterthought in this discussion. It's really Westbrook and Harden. And we will move on now to a segment. This was something that we discussed while we were hanging out this weekend. We went to a minor league baseball game, as we mentioned. Shout out to Eric Wood, by the way, if he's still listening, or if he ever listened.
Man, if you're still listening.
We love you.
Woo, you're still listening. Yeah.
Favorite fan.
The DMs are open.
Oh, please. Please let us know.
But we got into a discussion about in-game experiences, in-person experiences for sporting events, and what's the best in-game viewing experience as a spectator. And so we thought, hey, we have a podcast where we can discuss things. Let's discuss this on the podcast. So we're going to do the Fire Four of in-person spectator experiences for sporting events. I think we're limiting it to sporting events. There was some discussion that we wouldn't, but we are. And so we're going to go, do we want to do our kind of ones and twos and threes and fours?
Sure.
Okay. And we can move in a nice little clip too. We'll see if we have any thoughts on each other's picks, but we'll start with Cooper.
All right. So my number one was college football. I think easily the best sports viewing experience. Not only is it an incredibly entertaining sport in football, but it does something that the NFL doesn't necessarily do, which is, you know, kind of compile and you get to experience all the different sort of tradition. I think it's very fun to go and see. It's almost more fun to be a visiting college football fan than it is to be a home college football fan. And to go and see these different venues and all these different traditions that all these, you know, teams do. So I absolutely love college football, and it was easily my number one.
Yeah, I agree with Cooper. That's my number one too. Having been to to Florida State and the Big House and Oklahoma, and then going to Notre Dame Stadium for, I don't know, 7 games a year for the past 4 years, college football is so much fun to be there. And it's even fun when it is, you know, below freezing outside and you can't feel your feet anymore and you just want to leave because you're so cold. It's still fun. And I think that says a lot. Love college football.
And Brian Kelly puts that theory to the test.
You know what? I'm not going to buy into this whole let's hate on Brian Kelly thing. I'm going to support him. And when he listens to our podcast after we win the national championship, he's going to say, hey, why don't we invite John back to campus to do an interview?
Or at least when Adams wins the Heisman.
When Adams wins the Heisman. Who's going to do the the ND radio interview? Maybe it'll be one of us.
Get those small takes boys over. Bring him back.
The small takes boys.
All right. My number one, I'll spoil it. College football is in my top four as well. It's not my number one, but I agree with it for all the same reasons you guys just mentioned. To a point that Cooper made, it's actually remarkable that the NFL and college football have such drastically different in-person viewing experiences playing the same exact sport. But I think we'll get to that here in a minute. But my number one is baseball, which is, as we said, what we went to go watch last night. And I'm not going to limit that to any particular level or any particular team or venue, because there's really nothing better than, like, last night we sat out in the outfield in the grass, sun was shining, food, good game going on in front of you. There's really nothing quite like it. And I think as far as the difference between an in-person and television viewing experience, baseball might have the most advantage to being there in person and watching it. And I know Cooper, you've mentioned that prior podcast as well.
Yep.
So yeah, baseball is my number one. No surprise there. If you're a listener, you know I'm a huge baseball guy. So what is your guy's number two? We'll start with John.
Yeah. So I originally wrote minor league baseball in here because I haven't been to that many major league baseball games. That sample size there is rather small. But I agree with a lot of what you just said, Jeff. Shout out to the Indianapolis Indians. They have a great ballpark. Sitting on the lawn is a great viewing experience. Tons of fun. But I just love it. It's college football is kind of a hypercharged atmosphere, and it's kind of got this sort of element of high anxiety, which makes it really fun and really driving and really gets you going. And baseball's got a little more of a laid-back atmosphere where it's more like everything that happens is fun in baseball. It's just like, you know, like, oh, there's a squirrel on the field. This is hilarious. This is great. And it's just, you know, it's relaxing. It's a great experience. And then, like, it's also such a
baseball is such a high skill sport in terms of it's one pitcher going against one batter, and then I don't know. There's a lot to be said for just sitting down and watching a baseball game. And I love it. Also, shout out to the hometown Biloxi Shuckers. Another great viewing experience for all those of you Gulf Coast listeners.
Of which there are many. All right, Cooper, what's your number two?
Yeah, I went with the NFL here, but there's kind of a important qualifier to that. The NFL while sitting on my couch at home, watching it on my TV. I love watching the NFL sitting on my couch at home, and I could not hate more going to actual NFL games. Just the amount of animosity and just aggressive and belligerent fans turns me off of every single NFL game, I think, that I've attended. I get so much joy from just sitting on my couch and eating food and drinking a soda and watching the game while sitting on my phone checking fantasy scores. There really are a few other things quite like it. So the NFL on my couch.
It's kind of the point in the NFL where, like, fans stabbed outside of Arrowhead Stadium during altercation is, like, not that surprising of news.
Mm-hmm. More like the usual. Yeah.
It's really not.
Like, oh, ho-hum. Just another day in Roger Goodell's NFL.
It's nice that it's not happening in Philadelphia, though. Right.
That is true.
If only it could be true.
The epitome of class in Philadelphia.
That's what they're known for.
It's a wonderful city. It's a wonderful city.
Brotherly love, baby. All right. My number two is hockey. And again, I'm not going to discriminate here between college hockey and pro hockey, although I've seen more college hockey than the NHL. But similar to the comment I made earlier about baseball and how the viewing experience is so much better in person, hockey is the same way, but for, I think, a different reason, in that you get such a greater appreciation for the speed of the game and the skill required to play it. On TV, the players are as it is in the NBA too, where the players look so small because everyone's so big, and you really get in person a grasp of how big these dudes are and how agile they are on skates, like doing things on skates that I couldn't do in shoes. And it's just, it's fast paced. And I like too that hockey, there's rarely whistles. Like the action is pretty continuous. John's making a face, I know, because he's a college hockey hater.
I've been to more college hockey games than you have, though.
I know you have. But anyway, I love watching hockey in person. I think it's an underrated sport. And
I'm going to push back from that a bit. I think hockey is better viewed, probably not in person, and from my personal experience, because hockey games consistently the longest sporting event I've ever been to. Longer than a baseball game. I've never been to a baseball game that's run as long as some of the college hockey games I've been to. Part of it is because the game is so fast that the action happens in smaller bites. And so it feels like the same thing is happening over and over and over again, when in reality, like, different things are happening. It'd be like if you sped up soccer by, like, I don't know, triple time, it would feel like the exact same thing has been happening over and over again, because you can't see the skill moments as much.
Mm-hmm. All the little nuances.
Yeah, all the little nuances. And I think that's part of the reason why I think it's difficult for me, at least, to watch hockey. Also, it's difficult for me to watch college hockey a lot because there are so many whistles. Icing happens so often in college hockey, it'd be rare to get more than a minute of uninterrupted play.
Those are fair points. I think it's more, not that those nuances are not noticeable, but, like, none of us grew up playing hockey. It's harder for us to notice them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're apparent if you have the eye for it. We just don't. Definitely. All right. So number three, let's start with Cooper this time.
Yeah, so I just kind of lumped all minor league sports into a single category. They're fun. It's definitely more of a laid-back atmosphere. I mean, this includes minor league hockey, soccer, baseball. And I like the kind of community feel that it all brings. I like being able to go to a game, and the chances of me running into someone are very high. I just like that. I like that it's kind of like a small-town feel. Definitely a huge shout-out to me to FC Cincinnati. I love going to FC Cincinnati games. Future most important MLS team in the state of Ohio.
Cooper, what would you contrast that community feeling with? What would you say would be the opposite of that community feeling?
The opposite of that community feeling?
Yeah. If you had to put a word to it.
Don't know.
Yeah, I'm stumped.
Yeah, probably hyper-consumerism.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And that's so, if you're listening, you can go ahead and put your – that fills out your bingo card.
Yep. Congratulations. Have a sip. We should do an all the small takes drinking game, but that's beside the point.
This is a family podcast, yeah, Jeff. Yeah. This is a family podcast. My niece is listening to it.
Cooper said he drinks soda.
Let's keep it G. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, John, what's your number three?
my number three is the Premier League. I've only been to the one Premier League game, Arsenal versus Leicester City, but I love it's got an atmosphere similar to college football where there's a lot of tradition and a lot of excitement and a lot of involvement in the game, lots of cheering and doing weird things with drums and stuff. Watching it at home is great too, because you get a slightly better appreciation for what's actually happening on the field. Premier League games are one of those things that translate well from the pitch to the in-house viewing experience, but for different reasons.
All right, and my number three, as I've already mentioned, is college football for all the reasons we discussed, and we don't need to mention it any further. So we'll go right now ahead to our last. We'll start with John this time.
So if we were talking about in-person sporting events, I would be remiss if I did not mention the sport that all of my siblings and I have participated in and that my mother is now a head coach for, and that is swimming. So while swim meets may be some of the longest events in your life, and while they may eat up more than an entire day, I think there are few sporting experiences more exciting than the end of a swim meet and swim relays. Like, you know, oh, you could be saying, oh, well, what about track? It's the exact same thing. Well, it's not. And having done both of them, there's these little differences that make the swim meet way more exciting. And the first one is you have no idea in the pool if you're really winning or not. Like you get a little bit, you can have a little bit of peripheral vision and you can kind of tell your competitors. But once you dive in, you're in a world to yourself and you just have to go. But no one outside cares about that. And everyone else is going crazy, cheering and yelling and screaming. And that's amazing. And it's great. And it's so much fun, especially to see the finish, because you know there's water flying everywhere and everyone's going into the wall and they hit. And then everyone has to look up at the scoreboard to see who actually, like, it's like, oh man, I think, you know, it gets a tie. I think we won. You look up at the scoreboard. There's like this moment of like pregnant excitement, just waiting to, I don't know. I love it.
I have nothing to add other than the fact that that totally invalidates your argument against hockey for being too long.
Oh no. I was trying to get to that at the beginning.
All right then, Cooper.
I don't think it invalidated it.
Yeah, so I actually don't remember what I put in the fourth spot, because I kind of changed it as soon as John said the Premier League, because I kind of forgot about that experience, you know, studying in London. It is an incredible and I think very unique experience, especially, you know, growing up playing soccer, watching soccer all the time. It's cool going. I mean, anyone who gets to go watch the sport that they grew up like playing knows this. Going and seeing an event live, you see things that you don't get to see on TV just because you get to see the whole field at once. And so you kind of get that, like, I get that when I go, you know, go to an MLS game and see the crew play. A Premier League game where these are the best players in the world, and it's fun to watch all their, like, different movements and just how technically gifted and how tactically smart all these players are.
Well, mine's going to sound really lame after that, because mine is the MLS, because that's the only soccer. It's the highest level of soccer viewing experience that I've ever experienced in my very soccer-deprived life. But I think soccer is in a similar vein to hockey in that it's really fun to watch in person because, A, you get an appreciation for how much the players run and how much movement's involved in the game, but you also have the constant action. And MLS and atmospheres, and I'll give a quick shout-out to Sporting Kansas City, which has one of the best MLS atmospheres in the league. I think most teams, if not all, now have these soccer-specific stadiums that are like 20K capacity, really rowdy fans. They've done a good job, the league has, of creating these venues. When it used to be, they play in these hollow NFL stadiums that were like a quarter full. So the venue and the game, that combination, I think, makes them also a really fun view experience. And you can get it on the cheap. Like, you're not going to have to shell out a ton of coin to go watch the MLS game, which is always a nice perk.
Hey, they won tonight, so congratulations.
The crew did?
3-1. Yeah. No, I mean, not the crew. I mean, Sporting.
Oh, of course, 3-1. Yeah. Yeah, I knew that. I knew that. All right. We will wrap it up the way we always do, and that is with the waste of data, the worst take of the week.
Yeah, so Deadspin put a funny article, you know, a funny little headline out, bashing Brian Kelly for saying stuff about Deshaun Kaiser, and That's a different thing and a different argument.
Possibly another waste of data, you know.
Yes.
Possibly
a greater waste of data.
Possibly, well, I don't know about greater, but possibly another waste of data. But my waste of data is Deadspin decided to call Notre Dame a toilet. And that's ridiculous. Notre Dame is an interesting metaphor. It is. It's a bizarre metaphor, and it's idiotic, and it's dumb. Notre Dame is the greatest university in the United States of America. The premier Catholic university in the world. Like premier Catholic steps. Research university. It's great. It's a beautiful campus. If you've never been there, you ought to go. I love Notre Dame. Don't talk bad about Notre Dame, or I'm going to come for you. All right? So there we go.
That was the sound of every single one of our non-Notre Dame listeners turning the podcast off.
Because there's nothing more appealing than a Notre Dame fan talking about how lovely and wonderful Notre Dame is.
Well, like, also, like,
if you want to criticize stuff going on at the school, sure, fine. Or you want to criticize Brian Kelly, yeah, let's talk about that. But don't call it a toilet. Come on.
Hasn't it been clearly established that Deadspin has a pretty major bone to pick with Notre Dame, going back to the Manti Te'o thing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care that much because it's just a dumb article title, but...
Hey, did you read the article?
No, I didn't. I scrolled right past it.
But you clicked.
No, I did not. I looked at it. I took a screenshot and sent it to you guys, and then I kept scrolling because I was like, I already know what this article is going to be about. It's a very effective title because I knew exactly what their take was. I'll give them that. Just don't call Notre Dame a toilet. That's all I'm asking.
I don't think we want to get into a feud with Deadspin.
No, Cooper, we really don't.
Cooper, what's your waste of data?
All right, my waste of data, and I'm actually incredibly surprised Dan Dockich hasn't made it on the podcast before, because I think he is the ultimate Twitter troll. So
we did start tweeting at him last week, trying to get him to bite. Nothing's happened yet.
It'll happen if we keep poking the bear.
So earlier this week, he tweeted out that the NCAA is the only place where 18 to 24-year-old athletes make $20,000 to $60,000 for 20 hours a week work, only 8 hours work in the summer months, and are exploited. And then he got into this feud with Frank Kaminsky, and if it's not obvious, I kind of support the Frank Kaminsky side. We have not really gotten into this conversation on whether or not college athletes should be paid, but I think Dockich is a little bit ridiculous, because it's not in really no work environment should you be paid on how much you work, but really how much value you add. I mean, that seems to, you know, make a little bit more economic sense. And when you look at these universities that, for example, Texas A&M, Texas, Ohio State, Michigan, well, really Alabama, Florida, all brought in close to $150 million in revenue, if not more than that. A&M came close to $200 million in revenue last year. Your scholarship is, you are not paying your players enough. That seems to be the definition of exploitation. It doesn't make sense to me. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. So I think NCAA athletes are exploited, and especially when you get to the fact that they can't unionize and also can't even sell their own name for money. That's the definition of exploitation. I think, Dan Dockich, you got it completely wrong.
Yeah, I think it's bizarre that athletes actually are treated differently from students, where I don't think an athlete can even start their own business technically at most universities. Whereas I think we actually might know some people who started businesses in undergrad and made money while they were in college.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's bizarre that athletes can't do that. And I grant you that, but I think there ought to be some sort of an unjust enrichment analysis going on here, where it's like, if the school is actually not giving them a fair, so like in a perfect world where, you know, an athlete gets an education, which is incredibly useful and means they get a, you know, can be effective in the workforce and actually, you know, get all the benefits of a college education, then I'm a little less open to the idea that they should be paid, because I think it's probably fair compensation for most parts. But the reality is they're not getting a college education, and they're not getting the benefits of the degree that like most individuals in the United States are graduating with.
And I think one other point that I wanted to bring up, not to interrupt, but I think Dan Dockich doesn't fully understand the ramifications of what he's saying, because he tweeted back at Frank Kaminsky that he should understand this because like he was a coach and his son played college basketball. But I don't think he fully understands that for a lot of college athletes, not making any money and not really being able to make any money while you had the potential to make money is incredibly damaging for them and for their families because of the places they come from. And I think it's just kind of, it's shallow, and I just don't think he's done his full research or really thought about it enough.
I'm gonna cut us off because I feel like this is something we should save for like July when baseball's in full swing and neither of you want to talk about it. This is episode topic. Hey,
table it.
Let's table it. Let's put it.
I resent you insinuating that the Phillies are going to be bad and that I'm not going to want to talk about baseball. The Phillies are going to be great this year. I'll remind you, we scored 13 runs in one inning against the Nationals this week.
I've heard that before.
Anyway, yeah. we'll table the should we pay college athletes discussion for a later time, and we'll move quickly. So I'll do my waste of data here to wrap it up. Mine is kind of a blanket waste of data. So today, the Masters final round, Sergio Garcia won his first ever major. Pretty happy for him. Got that choker monkey off his back.
Man,
Hashtag choker monkey.
I hate those.
Yeah, you really do. But Sergio has a track record of choking, and he missed like an 8-foot putt in the 18th hole that would have won him the tournament. So they had to go to a playoff, and then he won the first hole of the playoff. But when he missed that putt, the Twitterverse went nuts. Like, I saw it was like a barrage on the timeline of vines and of video clips.
Is everyone tweeting their Instagrams?
They were all tweeting their Instagrams, doing their Twitters. But yeah, so my waste of data is anyone who prematurely ripped on Sergio and slammed the choker monkey tag on him because he proved them wrong, threw that choker monkey clear off his back, and won him a green jacket that I think he is deserving of, as much as he can be kind of an irritating guy. It was pretty fun to watch him win today. So Twitter, I usually love you. I usually defend you. But today, you may have jumped the shark a little bit.
You know, Jeff, the moral voice of the millennial generation.
Our guiding light.
I assume the role, and I accept the responsibility. All right, and that's our show for the week. Thank you guys for tuning in. Shout out to Eric Wood, if you're still listening. Shout out to...
If he's Scott. The man.
He's still listening. He's the man. Shout out to John's fiance's cats and the reason that we all still have nasal congestion. And shout out to anyone else who's listening. We really appreciate you. This has been a lot of fun in all seriousness. And we appreciate all the folks who listen week in and week out and give us their thoughts and give us their input. We hope you continue to listen and we hope we continue to entertain you. So if you have those thoughts, if you have suggestions, if you have any input on the show, hit us up. You can leave us a review on our iTunes page, or you can find us on any of those social media pages that we mentioned at the start. Yeah, we just really appreciate listening, and we'll be back next week, same time, same place.
Dope.